to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome to An Adventure in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here tonight with Mac Burns, Clatsop County Historical Society.
Just the two of us.
It is.
It feels weird.
Just the two of us.
Oh my gosh, you're singing. What? Did that count as singing?
It didn't, because there's copyright laws and everything. That was just... It's just the two of us, though. We've had lots of guests.
There's something about this studio and the dynamics that when it's just two of us, somehow we sing. Not all
right,
the time, but
you did it last time, didn't you?
I think so.
You did. It
has been known to horrify the audience from time to time.
And that's why we had a slew of guests
that's
after
right.
that.
Never again, Mac. Stop it. You need to stop it now. But yeah, we have had like this incredible run of guests.
We have. We love it.
So... Yeah. But this is going to be a good show.
The best one yet.
It will be our best ever yet.
It will. So,
do we have stuff to plug?
There's a couple things.
It's exciting. We're back in the world of plugging stuff again.
I love it.
Events. Things are coming. Things are happening.
It is. Yes. Farmers markets on every Wednesday from 2 to 6, the Seaside Farmers Market. Providence Seaside Hospital is a sponsor for the whole summer. It's a lovely little market.
Is there anything that Providence Seaside is not a sponsor of?
People might tell us after this. Yes. No, we do support a lot of activities in our community. And then also Astoria Sunday Market, another organization that we love to support, which is the Astoria Downtown Historic District Association. But Astoria Sunday Market's every Sunday, 10 to 3, and you're going to go join your family at that market sometime soon.
Some point.
Yeah.
Oh, I've never, since I've been here, I've never gone a season without going at least two or three times.
It is fun.
I'm not an every week guy.
And those are very different farmers markets, by the way, because this Wednesday one is just food and produce. Mm-hmm. So, and then the Sunday market, you can find all sorts of
I'm distracted now. I'm thinking out loud, and I shouldn't do this, things that just enter my head. I wonder where the word produce came from. Oh. Is it that people are producing, farmers are producing?
It seems like that would make sense.
I like word origins, and unfortunately that would have been a great setup because we've done word origins on the show, but I don't have word origins today. But when you said produce, that instantly just, I got distracted.
Yes.
So, and we're gonna have fireworks.
Yes, we are. 4th of July is coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fireworks
That's
again.
Exciting.
I missed last year because they didn't announce it.
Oh.
And I didn't know.
It was supposed to be a surprise.
I know.
I don't think that they... did announce it.
Nobody told me.
Right. Sorry. I have young children, so I haven't seen the 4th of July fireworks for 6 years.
And I take it that they like fireworks.
They do. That's a little late for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't like just watch a recording or something and say this is happening now.
Yes, we have. And our neighbors don't get me wrong. Our neighbors light off tons of fireworks.
Yep. See. I'm not a fan of that. All right. So we get to the history highlights.
Yes.
These are things that happen tomorrow.
Yep.
So June 28th. 1776, the final draft of the Declaration of Independence is submitted to the Continental Congress. It kind of makes me laugh, like it's submitted turning it in, my paper into the teacher. It just kind of, I don't know. 1838, the coronation of Queen Victoria in Westminster Abbey, London.
Nice.
Victorian age.
Yeah.
It's like forever, 1838. 1919. And this was almost going to be my history highlight. I had trouble today. 1919, Treaty of Versailles ending World War I and establishing the League of Nations is signed in France.
Yeah, that is.
And of course, it kind of, because it was not a good end to World War I, as many historians will argue that World War II is just a continuation because of the treaty, and mm-hmm. it didn't really solve things that it should have solved. 1953... workers assemble the first Corvette in Flint, Michigan.
Oh, how fun.
You know, I like the way Corvettes look, but I can't get into a two-seater. a sports car. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm glad people that want to spend money and appreciate that, but to me, I could never spend money in a car.
No.
So, but I do like the Corvettes. And of course, that could be Mark Hamill's finest movie ever, Corvette Summer.
Ooh, I haven't seen it.
I'm making fun because he was in Star Wars, the best movie ever made. He was also in Corvette Summer.
An inside joke with yourself.
Yes. Yeah, kind of was. I'm sure a couple of listeners are chuckling. 1976, the first woman admitted to the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Yeah, I saw that.
1976. How come women can't be pilots? Yes, right. They can.
And they were.
And they were. Yes. Actually, they were before
that. They really were, yes.
World War II. They're flying all the big planes over to the... Yep,
the bombers. Yeah.
2007, the bald eagle is removed from the list of threatened species.
Ooh.
And with how often we see them here in our region, it does
all
kind of
the time.
It does kind of make you go, how could they be endangered? They're kind of everywhere.
They are everywhere. And they're so huge.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although, funny thing, you know, the first time I saw the flight of, shall we say, love between two of them.
Yeah.
I had my parents here. And they did not understand what was happening.
Oh.
I said, oh, look, they're fighting.
Nope.
I said, I don't know that they are, Mom, Dad, sorry. I think something else might be going on. But the history highlight of the day, and it kind of ties back into the 1919 Treaty of Versailles, ending World War II, ending World War I. 1914, Austria's Archduke Ferdinand is assassinated. The Archduke Franz Ferdinand of Austria and his wife Sophie are shot to death by a Bosnian Serb nationalist during an official visit to the Bosnian capital of Sarajevo on this day in 1914. The killing sparked a chain of events that led to the outbreak of World War I by early August.
Mm, yeah.
Because all these treaties.
Yep.
Like, okay, you got to do something about that. Oh, you're not? Well, then we're going to declare war. Oh, no. Well, then we have to declare war. Oh, no. We have to declare war. So it was this huge just domino effect. But it all starts with the shooting of the Archduke.
Yeah, that is, yep.
Our history highlight of the day.
It's good. You missed a couple.
Uh-oh. What I missed?
1884, Congress declares Labor Day a legal holiday.
Ooh, I like Labor Day.
I like holidays. 1911, Samuel Battle becomes the first African-American policeman in New York City.
Wow, what year?
1911.
Yeah.
First.
Interesting. Yeah.
1964, Malcolm X founds the Organization for Afro-American Unity.
You know, I've read Malcolm X's autobiography, and I highly recommend it. And I like it especially because he has this incredible evolution of his whole political beliefs and what he thinks is the right way to achieve equality, equity.
Right. Yeah. So. An evolution. And then 1970, Muhammad Ali stands before the Supreme Court regarding his refusal of induction in the U.S. Army during the Vietnam War. And 1 year later, on the same day, the Supreme Court overturns the draft evasion conviction for Muhammad Ali.
Sting like a bee. You better watch out for Muhammad Ali. I like that.
But exactly 1 year. I mean,
1 year, yeah.
Did they time it? So
you almost think they
must have.
We
forgot about this. Got to get it done. Check.
Yeah. Or maybe it was like a couple of weeks and they're like, well, we might as well wait till the 1 year anniversary.
Make him sweat it out.
Okay, but we did miss something else.
Yes, we did.
You know, World War One that leads to World War Two kind of takes up the entire century. But on this day, on June 28th, 1969, the Stonewall Riots begin in New York City's Greenwich Village. And many historians, I mean, I think that you can certainly go back further, but many historians think this is really the beginning of gay rights and more of a public outcry.
For sure.
And since this is Pride Month,
yep.
Even though we know we had Pride Week in Astoria, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
Right.
It is Pride Month.
All month.
So we're still in the nick of time here. So we thought we'd talk a little bit about what the Stonewall Riots are, because I think a lot of people don't really quite know, or maybe they just know the name and don't really quite know what happened. Mm-hmm. So, sometime after midnight on June 28th, 1969, in what is now regarded by many as history's first major protest on behalf of equal rights for LGBTQ people, a police raid of the Stonewall Inn, a popular gay club located on New York City's Christopher Street, turns violent as patrons and local sympathizers begin rioting against the authorities. Although the police were legally justified in raiding the club, which was serving liquor without a license, among other violations, New York's gay community had grown weary of the police department targeting gay clubs, many of which had already been closed.
Now, soon the crowd began throwing bottles at the police. The protest spilled over into the neighboring streets, and order was not restored until the deployment of New York's riot police sometime after 4 a.m. The Stonewall Riots were followed by several days of demonstrations in New York and was the impetus for the formation of the Gay Liberation Front, as well as other gay, lesbian, and bisexual civil rights organizations. The next year, in 1970, New York's first official Gay Pride Parade set off from Stonewall and marched up 6th Avenue. June was later designated as LGBTQ Pride Month to commemorate that uprising. In 2019, the New York Police Department formally apologized for its role in the Stonewall riots and for discriminatory laws that targeted gay people.
You know, I kind of like when cities or governments or police departments or whatever it may be, organizations, apologize years later.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of okay with that.
Oh, sure.
That we're not going to ignore it. We can't go back in time and fix it
right.
until we invent a time machine, but we can at least acknowledge.
Right.
So I'm kind of okay when organizations like the New York Police Department formally apologize. Okay, so we've got a few things about this. The first documented U.S. gay rights organization was founded in Chicago in 1924. It was a guy named Henry Gerber, a German immigrant, founded the Society for Human Rights. I like that. Mm-hmm. The first documented gay rights organization in the United States. During his U.S. Army service in World War I, it all ties to World War I today.
There you go.
Gerber was inspired to create his organization by the Scientific Humanitarian Committee, a homosexual emancipation group in Germany. And that's all in quotation marks. Gerber's small group published a few issues of its newsletter, Friendship and Freedom, the country's first gay interest newsletter. Police raids forced the group to disband in 1925, but 90 years later, the U.S. government designated Gerber's Chicago house a National Historic Landmark. Friendship and Freedom.
Yeah, nice. Number two, the Pink Triangle was co-opted from the Nazis and reclaimed as a badge of pride. Before the Pink Triangle became a worldwide symbol of gay power, it was intended as a badge of shame. In Nazi Germany, a downward-pointing pink triangle was sewn onto the shirts of gay men in concentration camps to identify and further dehumanize them. In 1972, The Men with the Pink Triangle, the first autobiography of a gay concentration camp survivor, was published. The next year, post-war Germany's first gay rights organization reclaimed the Pink Triangle as a symbol of liberation.
Yeah, I wasn't going to try and pronounce that either.
It's German.
It's a German name.
I
realized that you were going to have to say that, and I wasn't. 3 years before Stonewall, a protest for gay rights started in another New York City bar. In 1966, three members of the, Madashin Society, an early organization dedicated to fighting for gay rights, staged a sit-in, a twist on the sit-in protests of the 1960s. The trio visited taverns, declared themselves gay, and waited to be turned away so they could sue. Although the state liquor authority initially denied the men's discrimination claim, the Commission on Human Rights argued that gay individuals had the right to be served in bars. For the next few years in New York, the gay community felt empowered. Police raids became less commonplace, and gay bar patrons, while still oppressed in society, had recovered their safe havens. I like sip-in.
Yeah,
that's a great protest.
Well, and this goes back to that first story where we're talking about the fact that that club didn't have a liquor license. Well, this is probably why.
Yes.
I mean, this was several years earlier. The state liquor authority was already sort of acknowledging they were discriminating. Number four, the mafia ran gay bars in New York City in the 1960s. It was an unlikely partnership, but between New York's LGBTQ community in the 1960s being forced to live on the outskirts of society and the mafia's disregard for the law, the two became a profitable, if uneasy, match. The State Liquor Authority and the New York Police Department regularly raided bars that catered to gay patrons. Where the law saw deviance, the mafia saw a golden business opportunity. A member of the Genovese family, Tony Loria, a.k.a. Fat Tony, purchased the Stonewall Inn in 1966 and transformed it into a gay bar and nightclub. To operate the Stonewall and its other gay bars, the mafia bribed the New York Police Department to turn a blind eye to the indecent conduct, quote, occurring behind closed doors. They also blackmailed wealthy gay patrons by threatening to out them.
So they've got it from all different directions.
Yeah, it's awful.
we'll bribe the police to stay away, but they're still then going to keep tabs on you and blackmail you, and we're going to make a bunch of money off of the liquor.
All of it.
Yeah. and you know, Fat Tony, he's kind of a famous mafia guy.
Oh, okay.
So not that I'm a mafia expert,
but
you know, I am from New York.
Okay.
All right. Police used a 19th century masquerade law to arrest people dressed in drag. Mm. In the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, LGBTQ people were regularly arrested for violating what became known as the Three Article Rule, or the Three-Piece Law. The rule stipulated that a person was required to wear at least three gender-appropriate articles of clothing to avoid arrest for cross-dressing. Now, somebody has too much time on their hands if they're making this law that specific. To avoid arrest for cross-dressing. It was referenced everywhere, including in reports about arrests in Greenwich Village in the weeks and months leading up to the 1969 Stonewall riots. The problem is, the law technically never existed. Hmm. Instead, accounts suggest the police generally used old, often unrelated laws to target LGBT people. In New York, a law commonly used against the community dates to 1845. 18, I didn't stumble there. Hmm. Not 1945, 1845. Yeah. And was originally intended to punish rural farmers who had taken to dressing like Native Americans to fight off tax collectors. Okay, there's so much wrong in that whole paragraph. You know, no, you can't charge me. I'm not a farmer. I'm a Native American. Right. Look at how I'm dressed. Ugh. Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Six, on the night of the Stonewall riots, police barricaded themselves inside the bar. After midnight on an unseasonably hot Friday night in 1969, the Stonewall Inn in New York City's Greenwich Village was packed when police officers entered the bar. As they began making arrests, patrons started to resist and push back. What ensued was the uprising that we mentioned before that would launch this new era of resistance and revolution. Close to 4 a.m. on June 28, 1969, the mob of protesters outside the Stonewall had grown so large and unruly that the original New York Police Department raiding party retreated back into the Stonewall itself and barricaded themselves inside. Some rioters used a parking meter as a battering ram to break through the door. Others threw beer bottles, trash, and other objects. No one died or was critically injured on the first night of the riots, though a few police officers did report injuries.
Okay, what I find fascinating about this is there's no cell phones, Twitter, email, hey, something's going on. Get everybody to come down here and protest.
Yeah.
So word just travels that fast.
For sure.
That's amazing. So organizers of the first gay pride parade opted for the pride slogan over gay power. The Stonewall riots made clear that the LGBTQ movement needed to be loud and visible to demand change. 5 months after the riots, activists proposed a resolution at the Eastern Regional Conference of Homophile Organizations in Philadelphia, that's a mouthful, that a march be held in New York City to commemorate the one-year anniversary of the raid. Their proposal was for an annual march on the last Saturday in June, with no dress or age regulations. When organizers were looking for a slogan for the event, a member of the planning committee, L. Craig Schoonmaker, suggested pride. The idea of gay power was thrown around as well, but Schoonmaker argued that while gay individuals lacked power, one thing they did have was pride. Hmm. The official chant for the march became, "Say it loud, gay is proud."
That's good.
I like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was tough, World War One starting or the Stonewall riots. So
yeah,
I had to choose, but we spent more time talking about the Stonewall riots.
But good deep dive.
Yeah. So, you know, I am so happy that we can have things like a pride parade or pride gathering festival. And I just think of what those guys back at Stonewall would have thought.
Right.
You know, I mean, obviously we do not have equality and equity in our society across the board, right. But to think of what they were going through versus today, progress has been made.
Yes.
Still a long way to go, but.
Yeah. And it is nice. It's nice to see our city filled with, you know, activities and occasions. And that really, a couple weeks ago, was a great occasion. I mean, people were filling the streets of downtown Astoria that weekend. So that was pretty nice to see.
Yep. All right. Shall we take a little break?
Sounds good.
We'll be right back on Adventure in History.
June 6, 1880. Fabre's Coffee House. When you come in from fishing cold and tired, what can be better than a cold, good cup of hot coffee? And Fabre's on Main Street is the place to get it. 10 cents will neither make, break, nor set you up in business, but it will get you a cup of Frank Fabre's celebrated coffee. Pig's feet, ham and eggs, and oysters in every style to order at the same place. Open day and night. Special attention paid to the ladies.
And welcome back to An Adventure in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Eastside Hospital here tonight with Mac Burns, Clatsop County Historical Society.
Okay, so we got some time. Shall we do some, since we talked about something happening in New York,
okay.
Shall we talk about some things happening in Clatsop County over the past couple of hundred years?
Yes.
So this is from our local periodicals, our local newspapers. And let's see, I like this one. June 27th, 1931, one of the largest crowds assembled in Astoria for a number of years gathered at the local terminus yesterday evening to watch the launching of the Tourist Number 3, new motor ferry built by the Astoria Marine Construction Company for the Astoria North Beach Ferry Company. The big vessel, one of the finest of its type ever built in the Northwest and designed and powered to make the Trans-Columbia trip in 16 minutes. Mm. Wow. Once her motors limbered up, slid easily and gracefully into the water as the final chocks were knocked out from the waves. As the big boat started on her plunge, Mrs. Fritz Elfing, wife of Captain Fritz Elfing, of the ferry concern, christened the vessel, smashing a bottle of Columbia River water against her bow. Whistles and sirens of nearby watercraft and applause from the crowd signalized the launching.
I love the use of adjectives in these old papers.
Although they smashed a bottle of Columbia River water? It's already sitting in Columbia River water.
Yeah, well, they drank the bottle of champagne. June 28, 1891, there will be an excursion to Gearhart Park from Portland on the 4th of July. Evidently, the people of Portland want to participate in a clam bake and see the prettiest seaside resort on the coast. W.I. Crawford & Company, general agents for Gearhart Park, will have a clam bake at that popular summer resort on the 4th of July.
I'd go to that.
Still very popular.
All right. I like this one, too. June 28, 1891, the same year. Caught in the act, Samuel Elmore has frequently missed fish from his cannery. Hmm. And last Friday night, Peter Schistad, one of his trusty employees, sat up to wait for the thieves. About midnight, he saw a brawny arm thrust through a broken window pane and a salmon extracted.
Ooh.
A second was also gaffed and about to be removed when he sprang out, fired his revolver in the air, and demanded an unconditional surrender. Then he took his two prisoners upstairs and mounted guard over them till daybreak. A warrant was issued for their arrest, and they were given a hearing before Judge Jewett. They gave the names of J.N. Johnson and P. Martin. They were bound over in the sum of $500 each to await the action of the grand jury. Schistad is generally commended for his bravery.
I like that they just had to sit around and wait for morning.
He just takes them up to the office and sits there with his gun pointed at him. Why doesn't he call the police?
Let's just hang out.
1891, he's got no way to contact the police?
Probably a far walk, yeah. June 28, 1898, submarine mines have been placed in the Columbia River Channel. General Order Number 28, issued by Major General Merritt from the headquarters of the Department of the Columbia, Vancouver Barracks, under the date of June 27, is of special interest to fishermen on the lower river. It reads as follows. Submarine mines have been placed in position in connection with the defense of the Columbia River for the following regulations for the safe navigation of the river by friendly vessels and for the protection of the defenses formulated by the Engineer Department and approved by the Secretary of War are published for the information and guidance of all concerned. These regulations will be strictly enforced from and after July 1, 1898 and until further orders.
At that time period, I'm kind of curious how many ships hit the mines by accident.
Well, it's like, so they're there. Are you going to tell me where they are? Because these people are still fishing.
Yeah.
Oh, just, they're there.
Just make sure your nets don't catch them.
I know.
All right. This is one of my favorites. June 29th, 1913. At last, it has arrived. A six-word phrase that is to be synonymous with Astoria, with her harbors, her railroads, her growth, and her people. Out of 2,000 slogans, one has been chosen and is today welded onto the name Astoria in a manner never to be detached. Today, Astoria announces to the world, in the words of contest winner W.S. Gilbert, Astoria, the town to tie to.
No, I think that's pretty awful.
So Mr.
A town
Gilbert.
To tie to?
A town to tie to. Isn't that terrible?
I mean, maybe he's thinking of
is that still in
mooring
the
a boat or...
Is that still on the Chamber's website?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Is that on the official City of Astoria letterhead?
Or on the signs. Yeah, the town.
So I was in a funny meeting years ago. Chip Jenkins, superintendent at Fort Clatsop at the time, And it was a marketing meeting that I guess there was a grant the city had gotten to work with the chamber or to help the chamber. But the guy had interviewed a whole bunch of people, and he wanted to introduce the phrase, the call of the sea. And he announces this in this meeting with like 20 people on the committee. And I remember Chip was there because he was the one that said, the sea. People don't think of it as the sea. You know, you don't come down from Portland or Seattle and say, I'm going to the sea. You say, I'm going to the beach. I'm going to the ocean. And before I could think, I said, okay, then why did you just spend $6 million creating the Fort to Sea Trail? And he just kind of stopped. He goes, oh, yeah, you're right. He goes, I withdraw my objection, but I hope other people object.
Oh, to be called out. It is a good name for a trail.
It is. It's
but
a great
I
don't know, name.
But I think he was right.
Yeah, nobody calls it the yeah. sea.
June 29th, 1934, St. Bernard dog joining Seaside Lifeguard staff. A T-bone steak in one gulp or three steaks in two bites. That is the speed of Seaside's second assistant lifeguard. 2 years old and weighs 160 pounds, big as a wolf and gentle as a lamb. Let us introduce Bruno. No, he isn't a bear. Guess again. Latest addition to Seaside's life-saving force is a pedigreed St. Bernard. In the Alps, the breed of dogs is used for rescue work. With the flask of reviving liquor strapped around their necks, they dash over the mountainsides in search of lost alpine climbers or travelers and then guide them to safety. Bruno may or may not have a flask of whiskey at his throat, but he is being trained to go through the surf by his master, Wallace Hugg, head lifeguard and James Reed assistant. Already he bucks the waves like a veteran, shaking his head as salt gets in his eyes. How fun.
I see. And last week we had Steve from the Seaside Museum, and he's talking about different exhibits they could be doing in their temporary exhibits in the future. And I was going to say, you know, hey, you should do one about lifeguards. And I couldn't remember this for sure, but I was like, wasn't there like a dog that was a lifeguard for a while? And there it is. Bruno.
We'll have to let him know.
All right. So a couple more. June 30th, 1877. Bears are making raids upon stock pens right in the city. A few days ago, Captain Johnson was startled at seeing a large black bear leave the hog pen at Mr. Wilson's slaughter yard. And Mr. W. informs us that he has lost two good porkers from such raids.
June 30th, 1877. Yesterday, the disgusting spectacle of a trial of brazen-faced courtesans for acts of indecency upon the streets of Astoria and was to be seen in the police court. Judge Taylor imposed a proper fine upon the parties, but it would seem that a simple fine is insufficient to enforce decency or due respect of law from such characters.
You just can't enforce decency.
I know. I like that they don't quite say what it is either.
Yeah. And I'm wondering like if everybody read already knew. You know, the brazen faced courtesans.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was fun.
Yes.
Shall we call it a show?
Let's call it a show. Let's do it again in a week.
All right. Go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for an adventure in history. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.